Play action. Mariota going for the big ball. Got a man open, and he's got the touchdown. Kendall Wright. Here's a first down handoff to Murray. He breaks free. Look at Mariota trying to lead him to the end zone, and he dives for the pylon, and he's got it. Mariota got an open man. He's got a touchdown. Second touchdown toss of the night for Mariota.
Oh, what a night for Marcus Mariota. Christopher Wesseling's boy lighting it up on Thursday Night Football. 36-22 win for the Titans over the Jaguars, and it wasn't nearly as close as the score indicates. I'm Greg Rosenthal, again with Chris Wesseling, and we're going to get to Dan Hansis, Mark Sessler, and preview all the Week 8 games in just a minute. We hope, Chris, that those games are better than this stinker.
This will end up being possibly the most misleading box score I have ever seen.
Yeah.
Blake Bortles will have 337 yards and three touchdowns without an interception. It's going to look like he played well.
Fantasy, if you started Blake Bortles, you're happy. And yet at halftime, if you didn't watch this game, 27-0 for the Titans. The Titans had 20 first downs in the first half. The Jaguars had 22 plays. So this was a good old-fashioned whooping by the Titans, who have a lot of good things going for them right now.
Well, they have an offensive line that doesn't get nearly the publicity of Dallas's, but has been every bit as dominant this year. DeMarco Murray's on pace for almost 2,000 yards from scrimmage. His numbers look a lot like his 2014 Offensive Player of the Year numbers. Delanie Walker's still a very good tight end. And I don't think it's any coincidence that Mariota's numbers have picked up when Kendall Wright came back, who is, you know, he's not a great receiver, but he's far and away the Titans' best receiver.
He's a good receiver. I mean, he's had points in his career where he looked like a quality, top-level type of starter, and they just don't have anyone else like that. Rashard Matthews is an okay rotation type of guy. The defense showed something. I mean, the defense, I know Blake Bortles is struggling, but the defense dominated the game when they needed to.
And we've seen signs of life in their defense for the past month. Brian Harakpo has been really good. Carl Klug has been good. And I think that Jarrell Casey is still kind of that all-pro, borderline all-pro kind of guy. They've got some talent on the defense.
You think they might be playing in January. I've been saying that. I think the Titans and the Colts are the two best teams. But the Titans, if Mariota has been one of their bigger problems so far, I think that's going to change. You know, that to me is a team with upside, because he's already showing that he's getting better.
Yeah, he's progressing throughout the season, which is not to be unexpected. Mark has said this from the beginning. Give him some time with a new system and new players around him, and he's getting better by the week. That's promising, as opposed to Blake Bortles, who is regressing to a degree that we haven't seen in a long time. He set records for Jacksonville last year, franchise records, second most touchdowns in the NFL.
And in a franchise that had Mark Brunell.
He is holding this team hostage right now. I know the offensive line isn't pushing people around. The running backs aren't breaking tackles. Allen Robinson is dropping passes. But it all starts with Blake Bortles and the delivery that gets longer every week. And he admitted to Phil Simms, I don't know where it started or how it started, but my delivery's gotten longer. And it all starts there. I think they have to bench this guy.
I do too. I think there's times when you can see a quarterback, young quarterback like Bortles, where his head is swimming so much that he's so out of it. Every game he starts out 2 for 8 for 11 yards with an interception. This is 4 straight weeks, basically, where he's had 3 quarters of play in a game where he was just inoperable. And it just, I feel like he might benefit from a couple weeks just on the sideline. Then you bring him back in for December. This team's going nowhere.
Yeah, they have to sit him down and fix that delivery. And it's extended to a mental thing, too. You'll see a wide receiver wide open, and he'll stare down the receiver and throw it straight into the dirt from 10 yards away. And guys with deliveries that are fine don't do that. Guys who don't have it in their head don't do that. This guy is holding the team hostage.
Well, the Jaguars, they're out of it at 2-5. I know that's a bad division, but to me, they're the one team I don't think has a chance. Shad Khan, their owner after the game, said, "Actions speak louder than words. I don't have much to say." I don't know if that was a precursor to Gus Bradley, possibly losing his job during the bye week. I tend to think Bradley will keep his job.
Well, I don't think that Shad Khan's going to like hearing things like Deion Sanders at halftime saying this team tonight has quit. The offense has been an issue all year. The defense tonight decided they didn't feel like tackling. There wasn't much of an effort going into tackling DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry and Delanie Walker on at least one play. So I don't think they can be happy with the effort level. There were three personal fouls in the first half. Jalen Ramsey continues to look like a hothead. I think there are issues that go beyond Blake Bortles here.
Yeah, they've been protected a little bit by a media that they're friendly with and has been wanting this team to be good. I've wanted this team to be good.
Well, look,
not working.
Think of their fans who have been sold a 5-year rebuilding effort, and they keep hearing hype all offseason and all summer, and then by October the Jaguars are out of it every year.
Well, that's it for the Jaguars being out of it, but you know who's in it? Dan Hansis, Mark Sessler, and a whole lot of good games. Best slate of the year in Week 8. Let's go to Dan to preview it.
The Around the NFL Podcast. And Mark's here, too.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled, teeming with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Mark.
Yeah.
You're back.
I'm back.
Many people were nervous.
When
was
nervous.
Mark going to return? You were essentially out a week of work, but you came back, and I was happy to see. I didn't know what state you'd be in. I didn't know if you'd be wheeled in on a gurney, if you would be a drooling vegetable. I had no idea what kind of Mark would show up, but you look just like Mark, and I'm happy to see it.
Well, I waited until I could reappear in, you know, somewhat tangible state. I was a little bit of a mess for a couple of days, but thank you to the people that tweeted at me and wrote, and I appreciate that.
You didn't like the people that were connecting your diet to this. You got a lot of tweets. I got a lot of tweets. Out of respect to you, I didn't pile on at all. I stayed at it.
No, you all three of you did an excellent job of non-piling on. It was a weird medical thing that popped up. I've not been to a doctor since 1997 before last week, which might have contributed to it. But
the Clinton presidency.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. You know, and
the first Clinton
the bill.
Presidency.
Yeah, but
we have listeners who weren't even born yet.
Huh?
We have listeners who weren't even born yet in
19. I know. Well, I wish I were their age. But it had nothing to do with a dietary issue. It was a blood issue. And they said, otherwise, I'm extremely healthy and should be able to remain in the NFL media group for at least a couple more months until we're all sent out of here at some point.
Oh, I thought you meant you were going to die.
No, we'll all be fired at some point.
No, you heard that right. Mark Sessler will never die.
That would be boring.
This is the Thursday edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, sponsored by Mr. Flames Economic Class in The Hague, in the Netherlands. Mr. F. What you heard at the top of the show was the tilt between the Jaguars and Titans. The scientists broke down that game, but there's so much more to talk about, but a little less than usual. So for the first of the next 2 weeks, six teams on bye. So, you know, 32 teams, six teams on bye, 26 teams, 13 games. One already played, 12 to talk about. Mm. See, that's pretty good, actually.
By you.
Yeah.
You've nailed it.
Yeah, we're going back to what is essentially 1972. I mean, maybe the NFL should rip six or seven or eight teams out of the league with the quality of
football. He was talking about his math skills.
Good math.
Frankly, it sounded rehearsed. I feel like you added – you did the math before you came in here. Yes, you did.
Oh, no.
What do you mean, oh, no?
That's Dan is showing us his
show
notes.
Your work.
He basically has crib notes written hand.
He had to divide 26 by 2 ahead of time.
It's called clean broadcasting by our host.
I nailed it. You should try being a pro, okay, Greg? Yeah, so we have a lot of stuff to get to, and we got Mark back in the house, and we got Wessling's new wardrobe is just popping, and everybody could check out on YouTube.
It's just a basic hoodie.
And all other methods of viewing the show, the preview podcast, which is chopped up in chopped up form. Where can people see the preview pod?
YouTube.
Not fine,
I believe it's on Apple TV, you know, previews and whatnot. You can find it.
NFL Now, if that's your fancy.
Really? Wes has a collection now of fitted cashmere hooded sweatshirts, and everyone is really enamored by them.
Well, he went out to the outlet shopping with his lady
friend. The old GF.
She picked out some stuff.
Can I have some equal time here?
Well, yeah, but I will just say last time at the bar when you that coming off your shopping day, you had a fitted, and I mean we're showing the pecs, the buys, the tries, and Wes has a good body. And he had the tight purple cashmere hooded sweater. And Mark, you were obsessed.
Well, I think it was more of a burgundy color.
It was burgundy.
This one is a sort of a dirty snow makeup. I love it. But the burgundy one at the Cozy Inn that night, forget about it. Wes just looked like a man shot out of a man cannon.
All right, Wes, you got your chance now.
None of these hoodies is cashmere, first of all. Second of all, they're not fitted. They're just large hoodies, and that's the way my body is.
Medium hoodies.
They're not medium. They're all large.
They're sized down a little bit. That's what happens when you get a girlfriend or a wife. You start wearing appropriate sizes. That's a thing that.
Well, then you just stop exercising once you get a wife entirely, and the clothing doesn't matter at all.
So plaid's out for Wes, basically. And highly expensive. How much did you spend in that shopping trip? Be honest.
Well,
did you spend over $300?
No, they were of lesser quality than I normally.
This really makes Wes uncomfortable before the pod. Here's where you can watch his hoodie.
Yeah.
On the old NFL Network, because he was in this hoodie for our NFL Network podcast Pick'em show. They might change the name by Saturday. But either way, check it out. DVR it. Watch it.
It is on three times on Saturday, a show that is, and we should have talked about this last week, but it is the Around the NFL podcast, Move the Sticks, and the Dave Damschek football program all together, breaking down every game. So, yes, make sure you check it out. Check your DVR or the listing. I don't know exactly what it's on.
It's like 12:30 p.m. right after noon Eastern time, 1:30 a.m. Eastern time, and there's also a morning show
in Saturday morning. But you just season pass it. You don't even have to watch it. You get credit if you season pass it.
Smart, girl.
That's how you do it.
All right. Well, I like the way you look, Wes. I don't want you to be uncomfortable.
I'm not. The paramour does want me to get rid of the plaid, but you cannot kill my plaid.
The plaid's going to come back.
Oh, yeah.
It's always coming back.
It's a staple.
All right. Let's get to the rest of the Week 8 games, and let us start, gentlemen, with the latest trip to London. One more game in London this season. This one between the Washington Redskins and Cincinnati Bengals. And this is a good matchup. London doesn't always get the greatest matchups.
Let's score some points in this game, Redskins and Bengals.
Yeah.
Not punts. Yeah.
How about this? A nice, taut 30-27 game. Mark, that'd be nice.
This could be the game that could give you that. I think that these are two intriguing offenses that are not fully formed necessarily at this point in the season. And my question with Cincinnati is I look at what they did last week against Cleveland. You ran for 271 yards against the worst defense in the league. And I don't think anyone in this room is overrating that against the opponent. But you did find your ground game. And it is not an offense for the first week in a while that is essentially centered around A.J. Green and nothing alone, which looked more like 2014 and 2013, this offense for parts of the season. And with the Redskins, they have an ability to score points as well. Their offense, to me, really centers around, if you want to go back 2 weeks ago, the way they played the Eagles, if you can punish with your ground game the way they did against Philadelphia, everything else starts to look better. Kirk Cousins does not make the mistakes. It opens up your passing game. Now, last week, they could not run that way, and they turned the ball over on the ground, and then you get into trouble. And so which Redskins team are we going to see? That's a big question for me.
I think the Bengals would invite the Redskins to run the ball, and Matt Jones fumbled twice last week and was involved in another botched exchange with Kirk Cousins.
He might not play
in
this
game
either.
He's banged up, and Rob Kelly, I know he's your Tulane boy, Greg, but not the strongest runner in the world. I think the Bengals would definitely invite the Redskins.
I like Kelly, though.
This is
big guy, not going to make you miss or anything, but I agree with you. And Matt Jones being hurt, if he's out, that's going to hurt them significantly.
This is how bad the Matt Jones issue is with the ball security, which was an issue last year as well, but he's fumbling once every 33 carries in 2016. The league average is once per 100. Mm. So you get the feeling he's fumbled three times this year that he doesn't have too many left before he loses his role in this offense.
And it tells you what they think about the rest of their backfield when they keep putting him back in games. He'll sit for a couple series, and then Matt Jones is back in there.
He's played well. When he's not fumbling the ball, he's playing well, and that makes it even tougher to take him out of the lineup.
These two quarterbacks are similar in some ways. I think when Kirk Cousins was playing well last year, a lot of people thought, okay, maybe he's going to be the next Andy Dalton, the, you know, not the most talented guy in the world, but Jay Gruden coach up. Andy Dalton is a far superior player to Kirk Cousins. Cousins playing a little better the last few weeks, but Dalton has really impressed me. He played fantastic against the Patriots. I think his season's been underrated. He's playing just as well as he did a year ago. He is doing everything possible, and now you're seeing the rest of the team kind of come together and catch up to him. He's a lot better player than Kirk Cousins.
And A.J. Green's playing better. He'll have one of the spots on our around the NFL midseason All-Pro team along with Julio Jones at wide receiver.
Saucy.
Tyler Eifert's back, and they got their running game back last week. I know it was the Browns. I know the Browns' run defense isn't very good, but they broke out some new formations and blew the Browns off the ball. They put a lot of guys on one side of the line, and the Browns weren't expecting it. I'd like to see if they can keep that going because Jeremy Hill looked as good as he has since 2014, his rookie season.
But what are we saying about the Redskins, though, if Matt Stafford had not directed an amazing one-minute drill to close that game? We'd be talking – I'm not saying that Kirk Cousins is, you know – the pie-in-the-sky type quarterback, whatever that even
they're
means.
Fine.
But
they're
fine.
They're
deep. No pie-in-the-sky quarterbacks.
Their offense in some games has imposed their will on defenses. I mean, it's like it's just to me they're a team that you don't know what you're going to get week to week.
To me, they're one of those teams every single game comes down to the last possession. So they are to me that means you're an 8-8 type of team. And they're going to win some of these at the end. They're going to lose some. But overall, that's who they are.
And you think Cincinnati has the edge in the quarterback battle? But are you aware, and Connor Orr wrote about this on the Around the NFL page, that Kirk Cousins is ahead in the preparation game. He's been wearing sunglasses at night to prep for his London trip as he tries to, I don't know, get ready for daylight. I don't know. I don't get the
– what would be the
trying to
there?
Adjust his body clock somehow, and sunglasses help. I'm going to call
wait,
BS.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
He's doing that to solve jet lag?
Yes.
That's insane.
I'm getting to bed earlier each night, getting up earlier, wearing sunglasses at night, little things just to try to make that adjustment as quickly as possible so I don't feel like it is this weekend when we get there.
You know his wife's like walking around like what's with this
and
clown?
He's
walking around with his sunglasses and around the house.
This guy's more square than Barry Goldwater.
Wow. One last thing about this game. Josh Norman is flying to London.
I didn't get the ref. I got to be honest. I didn't get the ref.
He's scooping out.
Okay, he's a goof.
It's an old ref. It's
how rest. Old? How old are we talking?
We're talking early 70s, late 60s. Political reference.
All right.
That was for you.
I loved it.
Thank you.
I didn't get it, but I like when you do your old reference.
Dan pretending he's not a big Barry Goldwater file.
I mean, Kirk, if you like wearing sunglasses at night and you think you look cool, just do it. You know, you don't have to hide behind these things. Let's move on and talk about a big AFC matchup, a 1 p.m. game between the Kansas City Chiefs and Indianapolis Colts. And, Greg, this is a Andrew Luck special. He needs to play at a top level to beat a good Chiefs team in his building. And we've seen he's been up to the task. He's playing very well again this year.
He's playing fantastic. But when your number two receiver is Jack Doyle and your number three is Eric Swope, you guys did a good job, Wes, especially pointing it out on the podcast. That's an Andrew Luck game. You can do that against the Titans. I don't think you can do that against the Chiefs. The Chiefs, to me, are a complete team. They're coming together on both sides of the ball. And if the Colts win this game, they'll have to play their best game of the season. I have really not seen one particularly good game out of the Colts. If you can tell me what that game is, let me know.
Well, he doesn't have to do it by himself anymore. I know that's the narrative, but Philip Dorsett is practicing fully on Thursday. Dante Moncrief is tentatively expected to come back and
that's
play
huge.
This week.
Absolutely.
Those two are huge. Jack Doyle is playing well. He's more than just some, you know, role player that everybody can
or
make fun of.
Fantasy flyer.
Jack Doyle is playing well. And their defense, their secondary, finally has healthy bodies and played a good game against the Titans last week.
What about if you're the Chiefs before the trade deadline comes and goes, you leave Jamal Charles with the Colts before this game ends? You don't need Jamal Charles right now. He came in last week, and I think you talked about it on Sunday night. Why did he come in? He played a couple snaps. Spencer Ware is, you know, he's got 35% of your ground yardage. You're a total offense in Kansas City. He's been a total workhorse for him. Why are you trying to shove Jamal Charles back into the picture at this point?
I don't know if he's going to have a real role in this offense, but one thing I think I do know is that Ryan Grigson's probably out of the business of surrendering high draft picks for somebody else's number one.
Are we saying that he's a GM that doesn't continue to make the same mistakes over again? Because I think he is. And one issue with this team is they're just not – we say this every week – it is not just an Andrew Luck-based team, and they can win the South because they have probably the best player in the AFC South in Andrew Luck. But come on, where is this team going?
Right. The Chiefs are a tough team to defend. This is Andy Reid's dream right now, that they have so many options on offense. They've only thrown 22 and 24 passes the last 2 weeks, yet 10 different players have been targeted in each one of those games. No one is getting more than 5 targets a week. It hasn't happened in weeks for that team. So that's terrible if you own Travis Kelce or Jeremy Maclin, but they're spreading it around. It's tough to guard these guys. Tyreek Hill now, as a receiver, he's one of the most exciting young players in the league.
Let's calm down.
What?
You keep trying to sell us Tyreek Hill. He averages like 2 offensive touches per week.
He's not an offensive guy, but he is so good as a returner. The Saints absolutely changed their entire strategy to avoid him as a returner, helped out the Chiefs' field position so that they're kicking it short all the time. Like, he's a difference maker.
I think the Chiefs, like last year, are starting to become who they are, and they're generating turnovers as well, and they're a team that needs to win the turnover battle to get, you know, winning record basically at all.
One last note. This is according to the NFL media research notes. I like this. First meeting between these teams since one of the great playoff games of the last 10 years or so, 45-44 win for the Colts, where Andrew Luck, he was a star before that, but he became a superstar that day, that great comeback. Let's move on. Talk about one of the top games in the NFC. At least record-wise, you can't say that, though, but it is the 425 Fox game. I don't know if we're going to have Joe Buck. Joe might be calling a World Series game. I don't want to go out and just tell everybody Joe Buck's out there.
It's only the 425 game because it got moved out of the
Sunday
night.
Oh, that's right. It got flexed. Got a bang flex. So what we have here is the Arizona bang Cardinals. Flex.
It's actually a 10 a.m., 1 a.m. game. We've got it all mixed up.
Not a 1 a.m., 1 p.m.
Research
1
guide.
1 p.m. Research guide coming up short.
The Arizona Cardinals, 3-3-1, coming off one of the strangest games in recent NFL history, that 6-6 tie with the Seahawks. Absolutely, they should have won and then also should have absolutely lost. They now travel to Charlotte to face the Panthers. And I don't know, guys. I mean, this game is one of the hardest ones for me to figure out because, Wes, on one hand, how long do you stick with a team that was good last year and say, oh, they're still going to be good this year? But on the other hand, I think this is a big-time wounded dog game. Big time. How's that?
Why don't we ditch that drop and go with the loser goes home game?
What drop is that?
Well, let's just get one.
Oh.
It's a loser going home.
Did you like that dog?
No, I don't like any dog being hurt.
All right, how about this one?
Why are we going down this road again?
It's funny that you wouldn't put this sound drop on the network show when we previewed this game, because I think you know the kind of backlash, the PETA,
well,
all
the
of
thing
that
I like about
happen.
It is when it just the show grounds to a halt because of it. That's the effect, and you can't do that on a network.
Okay. Well, that's because 3 of 4 people in the room seemingly care about animals.
Sydney, what was that last drop, by the way?
That was Goofy.
Oh, Goofy. Mm.
The man.
Grow up, Peter Pan. I mean, it's a cartoon.
You made your point.
Right.
I concede.
Here we go. All right, here we go. Wounded dog game in the sense, Wes, that the Panthers, they're going to be dangerous in their building at home, right? Right? Like crazy?
Right, but they're facing another wounded dog. Mm. The Cardinals are in a must-win situation. They're going to have to go, you would think, 10-5-1 now that they have a tie. So they can only afford 2 more losses the rest of the way. Maybe the Panthers can only afford 1 more loss. Either way, I think this is 2 desperate, desperate teams.
I agree. I feel like you're saying, when should we jump ship on the Panthers? How about 2 weeks ago?
Don't win in the Superdome. That was a tough loss for
them. Tough loss.
Yeah, I mean, I get that we respect the fact that the Panthers over the last couple seasons have been one of the streakier teams. Last year, in a good way. Previous years, they get off to a terrible start then rebound. But I don't see the
you say rebound.
Yes, they bounced back, Dan.
Rebound.
I don't see
people
the
rebound.
DNA in this
rebound.
Team.
Yeah.
Don't see the
that's
DNA
British,
in this team.
That's his British.
One thing I like about this show
is
been gone for a week, and the constant pattern of anything I say is mowed over by Wes, by Dan, and by little old Greg over there every single time. It's absolutely fantastic.
When somebody does an aside, you're kind of mowing over the aside, so you're not letting that breathe at all either. It goes both
that
ways.
That is nonsense.
I remember when Charles Barkley led the league in rebounds.
All right, so... Okay. Where? All right, let's get back on track here. So the Cardinals, let's talk about the Cardinals, Greg, because the Cardinals are a team that they are not scoring any points. They scored 6 points in five quarters, essentially, on Sunday night.
They're weird.
Against a great team, but still.
They're weird. It's the total opposite of when you think back to the NFC Championship game, that the key matchup here is the great Cardinals offense versus the great Panthers defense. Now those two units are mediocre. The only group in this game that is playing well this year is the Cardinals defense. I mean, Football Outsiders has the Cardinals offense 25th and their defense 4th so far this year.
Wow.
And if you're just looking at who's played well in this game this season, the Cardinals defense gives them the edge. Tony Jefferson and Kevin Minter. It's not just the big superstars that are playing well for Arizona. They're good everywhere. Marcus Golden, Calais Campbell, yeah. And they're the group that could win this game alone for them.
And people want to talk about the missed field goals in the Sunday night Seahawks-Cardinals game. That was one of the more fascinating defensive battles we've seen since we've all worked here together. It was an unbelievably fun game to watch, and it is completely legitimate what Arizona did on defense. They've given up 9 points in 8 quarters. And you're Carolina. You have the second most turnovers in the league right now. You got to correct that. Carolina is making mistakes and not generating points, and their defense, which was their linchpin, is giving up massive yardage.
It's worth noting that these two teams, when they were playing their at a high level, you know, one of them won 45-7. I mean, I don't know if it's a matchup thing or not, but it's kind of overlooked that not only did they beat them, they absolutely humiliated the Cardinals.
These are totally different teams.
I mean, that feels like 1,000 years ago.
They're
right
totally
now.
Different teams now. And I think if you're a Cardinals fan, if you strain hard enough, you can see some signs of progress on offense.
Yeah.
John Brown's supposed to come back this week. Michael Floyd played well at the end of last game. But then you look, and Michael Floyd's got a hamstring injury. He's not practicing. The right side of the offensive line is a major problem. Bruce Arians just doesn't trust that right side. Carson Palmer doesn't trust that right side. They don't even barely run off that right side.
Palmer's not 100%. I mean, he's going to play, but he's not a fully healthy.
He's not moving well in the pocket either.
Why does the NFC West as a division say, we don't care about the offensive line, we're just going to ride with what we have and just get our quarterbacks get whacked week after week?
It's a good question.
All right. I'm going down on the ship with the Panthers here, if I have to.
See you later.
You know what I'm – in fact, you know what I'm going to do right here?
Are you going to lock it up?
I'm going to lock this one up. Lock it up. Come on, baby. Here it comes. Spin it. Make sure it's secure. Lock this one up. I'm on a one-game winning streak with the Lock of the Week.
Well, I think if the Lock of the Week segment has taught us anything this year, it's that it's entirely meaningless.
No, it has turned. It has turned now, Wes.
Oh, now it's actually in the vault.
Not only did I lock it up, Connie Fox locked up the Chargers in Atlanta last week.
She locked up the Lock of the Week?
We're flying it.
I was watching coverage in the UK, and their show also had a Lock of the Week.
All right, let's – yeah. England locks it up as well.
That's
interesting.
That's what I was
breaking
saying.
News. England's locking it up as well. Let's move on. Let's talk about a inter-conference matchup. I don't know. The Oakland Raiders are 5-2, and now they travel to Tampa to face the 3-3 Bucks. And, Wes, here's a matchup where, again, the Raiders are in great position right now to get to the halfway point on pace for a 12-4 season. And all they do is beat the Bucks, who you hate, Wes, right? So you think the Raiders are cruising, right?
Well, I gave the Bucks a little bit of credit Sunday night for their win.
You did.
They play better than I expected. You forgot to mention this is, what, the 2002 Super Bowl rematch?
It sure is.
Is it a revenge game for the Raiders?
Half the team was like 12 years old when this
what
happened.
Is the statute of limitations on revenge games? I don't know.
One of the worst Super Bowls of all time.
It was except awful. For Dexter Jackson's pocket. Anyway, Raiders.
All right. Wait, what does that mean?
Wasn't he the MVP of the Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah.
And then he got a big
save for Barrett Robbins spinning down
into
Mexico.
Save for one of the more forgettable names of a head coach in a Super Bowl in a long time. Can you guys name the Raiders head coach in that game?
Callahan.
Bill Callahan?
Okay, that's good. I'm just saying, though, I haven't heard a lot about Billy Callahan in a while.
Right.
Well, the Raiders have the second best record in the AFC right now.
Little Callahan aside there. I like it.
The Raiders have the second best record in the AFC. Does anyone actually believe they're the second best team in the AFC this year?
No, I think they're similar to the Redskins, that they're just a team. Every game is going to come down to the end just about. The game against the Jaguars was actually their most perhaps impressive game of the season.
Jaguars don't count.
At least they can beat bad teams. They showed that.
Well, so the Jaguars cannot figure themselves out on offense, and it helped the NFL's worst defense in Oakland look a little better.
Well,
I mean, the problem is Oakland continues to give up huge plays on defense, and I think the record is nice at this point. Nice for them to get out to this start, but it's going to catch up to you at some point.
I think when you watch the Raiders' defense, though, they're not one of the worst defenses in the league. They had two really bad games to start the season, and they've had some games where they haven't been great, but for the most part, they have talent on defense, and since those first 2 weeks, they've been okay.
I would say they're rather underachieving, though.
Yeah, that's fair. They can do better.
They've got the talent to turn it around, but I don't give them any credit for beating the Jags.
Wouldn't surprise me if the Bucs win this game, though, but they cannot get healthy. I mean, they keep waiting. Doug Martin had a setback from his injury.
That hasn't been a problem. Quiz has been more than anyone could have expected.
That's fine, but
it hasn't been a problem.
It has been. In that one game against the Panthers, he averaged 3 yards per carry. It wasn't the craziest performance. He had a great game against San Francisco. When you play good teams, it would be nice to have Doug Martin. That's all I'm saying.
I get that.
Let's move on and talk about a matchup between the Seattle Seahawks and the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, Greg, I think here's the thing. Arizona Cardinals have very nice defense, but there were times – in that Sunday night game where the Seahawks just looked lost. I mean, punt after punt after punt after punt. And it really gets you wondering how much is Russell Wilson's leg issues really holding this offense hostage at this point. Do you think they'll be able to score points against the Saints like everyone else does, or are they going to continue to have issues?
Everyone can score against the Saints, but can you outscore the Saints in the Superdome? Can you outscore this Saints offense, which I think is easily the best Saints offense since 2011, maybe the best one since 2009, pass protection getting better every week, the best three wide receiver combination that Drew Brees has ever had. Now, that's not including when he had Jimmy Graham. He's not a wideout. But Cooks, Thomas, and Snead, they're lighting up. This is a great matchup when the Saints are on the field. This is one of the best defenses and one of the top three or four offenses. It wouldn't surprise me if the Saints win this game for the same reason that the Seahawks are coming off 100 snaps a week ago. Mm.
It would surprise me. Do the Saints have an edge rusher?
No. I mean, they have Cameron Jordan, who's a good player, but he's not really an edge rusher.
Three games the Seahawks have played against teams with good edge rushers, their offense has been shut down. Mm. And when they... because Russell Wilson can't move and the Seahawks' tackles are garbage. But when they play against a team that doesn't have an edge rusher, they do fine.
Well, I think this pectoral injury, which they're talking about with Wilson, is a concern. But Wilson played great against Atlanta. Wilson played great against the Jets. So I don't know about this Russell Wilson mobility is that big of a problem. It wasn't a big problem the 2 weeks before that.
I think it's funny that I've been real hard on Sean Payton and the Saints for their defense, but if you do, watching what they did on offense last week when Snead got back involved in this passing game, it's funny that a year ago we were talking about a Saints offense that wanted to become the 2014 Cowboys. They wanted to use Mark Ingram and chew up the clock. And finally, give Sean Payton some credit at least for saying, forget that. We know who we are. We're going to pass the hell out of the ball nonstop. And honestly, they
look...
Should
we give them credit?
I will give them credit. You've got a couple more years with Drew Brees, and listen, they got the guys in-house to do it. Their passing game is unbelievable.
I agree, but shouldn't Mark Ingram have 100 yards every once in a while? And
Mark
shouldn't
Ingram,
he have 25 carries
does he look
to help
like
out
the same
a defense?
Does
no, he doesn't look
he
like
He does not look like the same guy to me as last year. There was a period late in the last week's game with the Saints where they got a little more balance.
Right.
And I thought it looked – that's the kind of offense you'd want. But they've not been able to do that.
That keeps their defense on the field. They might get Delvin Bro back, which would be – if he doesn't come back this week, whenever he comes back, that's a huge addition for that team.
Russell Wilson told reporters on Thursday that he was told his knee injury was supposed to sideline him 4 weeks. He didn't miss a game. That's a little bit of a Big Ben humble brag situation. But also it again tells you the severity of the issue that he's dealing with and why he might not be right until after the season ends. We'll see how this all plays out. Moving.
I'm taking the Saints, by the way, in this.
Oh, let's pick that game. Anybody else got the Saints?
Sea chickens.
I'm going Seahawks.
On the Superdome playground. I'm with you. Let's roll. Let's roll. We'll take a shot on that one. All right, let's move on. Talk a little Lions at Texans, guys. And the talk of the league. And there's two. This is really the tale of two quarterbacks right here. I mean, you have on one side, Mark, Brock Osweiler is coming off maybe his lowest moment on Monday night against his old team. And then on the other side, you have the reborn by Cooter, Matthew Stafford, who is getting legit MVP buzz. Do you think he deserves to be in that conversation right now?
Absolutely. Watching Matthew Stafford over the last couple weeks to a month, this is completely different than the way I used to feel watching Matthew Stafford, where I found him so frustrating. He drove me nuts. He would do things physically, mechanically, and decision-making-wise that would just make Lions fans insane. Instead, this year, it's completely the opposite. And I don't want to say that it's because Calvin Johnson isn't there. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But he's doing it last week without any semblance of a ground game. It's on his shoulders, and the way he beat the Redskins in the final minute was one of the better, you know, closing moments for a quarterback all season. And I think he'll be able to continue that against the Texans. The bigger question for me is, you look at Osweiler. We all saw that game in primetime. What a disaster. The aura around this Texans team is one of great disappointment, because you poured a ton of money into what is essentially a backup quarterback that might even be third string in the way he's played on some teams' rosters right now. Can you get healthy against a Lions defense that allowing a 75% quarterback
might be the worst defense in the league. It's in the mix.
I can't believe it.
They're allowing quarterbacks to get healthy, but I just think with the way this Texans offense is centered right now, Brock Osweiler is hurting them week to week. Guys like Kerry Hyder on the Lions are getting to quarterbacks. He's going to get pressured. We'll see what happens.
The way you just bury your hand in your face when you hear that drop. Can we hear it one more time?
Oh, I can't believe it.
That is Greg's impression of Brock Osweiler, just so everyone knows. Speaking of Brock Osweiler, by the way, a Texans fan, and when these stories pop up, you know you're in a funk whenever this happens. A Texans fan has started a GoFundMe to raise $72 million to buy out Brock Osweiler's
contract. Do you blame him?
I totally don't blame
him. I mean, it's
a bad situation. We talked about this in depth on Tuesday's show, but they're in a tough situation. They're locked in with him, and they need him to show something against Detroit, Wes.
I can't believe I'm picking the Lions to win this game, but I think other than Blake Bortles, I have less confidence in Brock Osweiler than any quarterback in the league. And I have a lot of confidence in Matthew Stafford. I'm not in the Pro Football Writers of America.
Why not?
But if I was, I'd be kicked out, because I haven't written a Matthew Stafford think piece this week. And every other football writer.
I hope you're reading the QB Index. We had ours a month ago, Matthew Stafford. We were ahead of the curve.
That's what we do. We are ahead of the curve.
They get Theo Riddick back this week. They get Eric Ebron back this week. That's part of
And they've got Golden Tate, a rejuvenated Golden Tate, as the centerpiece of their passing game right now.
Isn't he also sort of their ground game too?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what's so impressive to me about what Stafford and Cooter have done. Cooter's an incredible play caller. They put up 31 points on the Rams in 8 drives without Ebron and Riddick, who are two of their 4 or 5 most valuable offensive players. It's incredible. And listening today, there was a good hit by on Up to the Minute from our reporter James Palmer, Justin Forsett, who's been there. He compared Stafford's mastery of the offense and the responsibility he has with directing where everyone's going to be to Peyton Manning. He said he's played with a lot of veteran quarterbacks, including Joe Flacco, for instance. None of them had that sort of mastery and control and ability to orchestrate the whole team like Stafford.
It's not and that surprised you. Who would have ever thought you'd hear that about Matthew Stafford?
Yeah, right.
It's not just the play calling, because finally someone has developed and worked with Matthew Stafford to correct a lot of the stuff that multiple coaches and position coaches could not. And I'll tell you something, Dan.
Yes?
That's why I'm making the Lions my lock of the week.
You're locking it up?
They're a fun team.
Wait,
disliked.
Let him lock it up. Spin it and secure the
door. It's in the vault. I have disliked the Lions and watching the Lions since childhood, because of the stadium they play in, their boring little dome, and just their whole boring, you know, feeling to the whole team.
Plus, they've been terrible most of the
time. And they've been terrible. That's completely different this year. They're fun to watch. And you know what? They're going to take this team down. The Texans have a lot of questions to answer.
You had an issue with the Pontiac Silverdome? Kind of romantic old building. That's where Hulk Hogan slammed Andre the Giant.
That's the most fun thing that happened in the Pontiac Silverdome in my childhood.
Unless you're a 49ers.
I actually went and watched that event live, closed circuit cable, in the Hartford Felt Forum, I believe it was called. Wow. Dragged my dad to it. He was questioning everything about my brother and I at that point. Why was he dragged to a WWF WrestleMania event? It was a great event. Sorry,
Dad. Especially, though, you're just watching it on TV, right?
That was a thing?
That's weird.
No, you couldn't order it at my
house. It's hard to convey how big wrestling was for any child from 1985 to 87.
Replace Saturday Night Live every fourth week.
Yeah, that was a huge event in our household when Saturday Night's main event replaced Saturday Night Live.
I think, although that is very true that it did, I think
it is very true.
SNL does go dark like once a month also. It just happened to slide
into that spot. I like to frame it differently. It completely dominated.
It was a big deal. I'm just for the sake of accuracy.
Just to recap, Dan pissed all over your points.
Sydney, that from the broadcast. That did nothing to help what Wes and I were trying to get to there.
Vince McMahon picked up the phone and Lorne Michaels was like, "Hello," and then Vince.
Well,
it got
massive ratings though too.
It did very well.
So your point is shredded and means nothing.
I'm good. Really. I mean,
we finally got Dan's Lorne Michaels impression. Hey, the show, that was good.
Long time coming.
It was the only night of the year or month that the Wesleyan boys were allowed to have snacks.
Oh, that's a sweet story. I like that. I like picturing that.
Threw him down the stairs.
Yeah. Well, it's snacks for like eight kids, so that's an investment.
Keep the change, you filthy animals.
The latch opens. You hear the door swing open.
Light.
Throwing like raw meat down the stairs.
It's like jugs of raccoons water. And badgers fighting for the same snacks.
Seven of us fighting over one Rolo.
There's like a dead Wesleyan boy skeleton in the corner. Like he never could make it.
Old Hank.
Old Hank Wesleyan.
No one knows about
Rest
Hank.
He
gone.
All right, let's move on and talk about, let's take a trip to the Throne of Ease. And my goodness. I mean, it's starting to get almost comical now. They get gift-wrapped a victory last week because Ben Roethlisberger's knees hurt. Now they're going to get gift-wrapped another win because LeSean McCoy was stupidly played in Week 7 by Rex and company.
We'll see.
And then we got the news also we'll get to a little later, but I was upset with this with Greg too, that Denver lost their starting running back too. Denver, the only real threat in the AFC. I'm furious right now.
Oh, yeah, the Patriots, they've never had any injuries in their history. I mean, that's what happens. That's football.
Just enjoy the Throne of Ease. That's all I'm saying.
They've had some breaks this year.
All right, here we go.
Except for, the whole suspending the best player in the league for four games for a ridiculous offense. Well, other than that, the breaks.
When you cheat, you gotta be punished. You got to face up to it.
Except the other 31 teams.
The bill always comes due. That's the lesson there.
Nice pun.
Yeah, that's good. It must have been a deflating situation. Has anyone done that?
No, you're the first.
Okay,
that was professional.
All right, here we go. The Bills, 4-3, lost in Miami, had a great opportunity to come flying into this Patriots matchup. But instead, they're coming off a tough loss to the Dolphins. They are the home team, but we should know that Tom Brady always has fun against Rex Ryan. But things were different. This is the second matchup between these two teams, correct? And the Bills won. The first one was.
Yeah, there won't be any Jacoby Brissett for them to pick on this time.
Well, that's fair.
And you do have to give credit.
Slice me off a piece of that Jake Brisket.
Just when I thought we'd never hear that again.
The 18-tackle game that Zach Brown had against the Patriots might be the best defensive performance I've seen all year. And he'll be – He wasn't practicing because of an illness, but he should be fine. The Patriots should be hoping that LeSean McCoy plays because he was terrible last week. He was dragging his leg around. He was not nearly as explosive as Mike Gillisley. And LeSean McCoy playing was bad not only for what it does this week and the week after that when he won't be 100%. It was bad because he didn't give them a good chance to win at a stage in that game where he couldn't make anyone miss. He couldn't do anything.
Well, the Bills' defense should be good enough to keep them in most games. Now they're going up against, what might be the best offense in the league. They do get Marcell Dareus back. It's going to be tough for the Bills to score a lot of points. They're not built to score a lot of points. They might be without Cordy Glenn. They might be without Aaron Williams, who's been a key part of that secondary, and it sounds like he's going to be out for a long time. It doesn't set up well for them, but this is a team that really won on both sides of the ball last time they played. Their offense, having a lot of long drives early against the Patriots, was a key to that game.
There was a point in the Steelers-Patriots game where the Steelers scored to go up. They were down 20-16. It's the fourth quarter. And it's almost you found out right then that New England is just toying with teams at this point. At that point, they stopped spreading the ball around. They just gave it to LeGarrette Blount and fired it down the field to Rob Gronkowski, scored instantly and absolutely powerfully imposed their will on the opponent. And at that point, I watched it. I said, they are going to win the Super Bowl, and we're going to spend the next 10 or 12 weeks talking around, flittering around other teams. Oh, the Houston Texans, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It does not matter at all. This team is by far, heads and tails, the best team in the AFC and the NFL. They are going to destroy Buffalo.
Deja. Hashtag save football. Cancel the Patriots.
Deja vu. I feel like this was your rant like right before you left for a week. And well, then you come back. And you
said, well, nothing changed.
Listen.
Tell you that.
Honestly, watching that Steelers game, and I understand Landry Jones was in there, and if you put Big Bang in there, that's a different matchup, but I'm not sure it matters. New England is not going to be stopped by anyone barring a rash of injuries. They are not going to be stopped.
They are. They're like in Swingers where he's using those bear claws, and they just kind of they bat around the pretty little team, and whenever they feel like it, they dig those claws in, and they do it. Here's two, Wes, I like.
By the way, thank God for that, because without the Patriots, there'd be no good teams in football.
That's exactly right.
Competitive balance.
Save the Patriots. Save football.
Wes, I know you like trivial stats. I like two of these, right?
No, I don't.
All eight of Tom Brady's TD passes this season have gone to RBs and tight ends. That's
which, can I spin off that point?
Sure, go ahead.
Julian Edelman, not very good this year.
Is it the foot?
He's not as quick as he was. He's not making big plays. He's not the player he was last year or the year before that.
And this is kind of a meaningless stat, but Brady has just become such a statistical monster in the last 10 years that all these stats are always crazy, but they're just fun to read. Brady is 11-0 in October starts since 2014 with 33 touchdowns and one interception.
I think there's one reason
for
that. There's something to be said for that New England, and we've talked about this before, they don't have a problem spending the month of September figuring out who they are and what they do best. And by the time you get to October and you still have a lot of healthy players and Brady is not in any level worn down, they just rip through people.
Here's the counter to that, though. I think all teams are trying to figure
not
this
the
stuff
way
out
they
in
do
September,
it.
And then but the Pats figure it out.
There you go.
A lot of teams don't. They can't.
The Pats do things well that other teams, professional teams, should be able to do and do not do.
I am uncomfortable with all this. They're in the Super Bowl. That's not how it works.
Because you don't like it. You don't like the reverse jinx.
That's not how it works.
It's not how it works, but it's how it's going to be.
Maybe. I hope so. But they're going to have to keep getting better. It's not like they're a perfect team. Are they a good pass blocking team? Not particularly. Are they a good pass rushing team? Not particularly. Are they a particularly good running team? Not really. Like they're good. They have Tom Brady and they have a lot of great
is this
parts.
Really happening?
I'm just saying. They're not the most dominant team we've ever seen.
Here's one example. Everyone's LeGarrette Blount's no, just a guy. He's nobody. You know what he is? He's dominating teams
week
to week. And the guy does not get. I'm not saying that he's the most versatile running back. He's a one dimensional type guy. But they say go in there and batter through teams. There were a couple runs against the Steelers last week where he's like. He just swaying back and forth and just went for 10 or 11 yards right through Pittsburgh's defense.
Mark, Greg, why don't you
That was a shameful performance by me. But it's not a great pass rusher or pass protector.
But then here's the thing. Okay. The rest of the NFL, what is the team? The NFL right now, the talent level of the other team seems to be lower. There isn't two or three other teams sitting out there. It just seems absolutely low this
year. Seahawks, Steelers when they get Ben back, which they will.
Well, one of Vikings. Them you meet in the Super Bowl. Two of them you meet in the Super Bowl.
LeGarrette Blount on pace for 1,300 yards and 17 touchdowns. I think the Patriots are running well, and Deion Lewis is supposed to return to practice. They could have a very versatile backfield that allows them to play in any situation they want.
They do have a good running back in Blount, but not a great running game. Like they don't. He's the only guy.
But they get what they need. Other teams would love when you know what? It's 3rd and 8. They hand the ball off. Other teams get 2 yards, and it's a nice punt. Somehow, Blount runs for a first down. It's almost like watching someone play a video game while the rest of the teams are in slow motion. I mean, there's no way to mask it, Greg, verbally.
Greg, I want you to put your high-octane sandwich where your hot take is.
Oh.
And two sandwiches if
I'm
the
not
Patriots don't miss
the Patriots.
Make the Super Bowl. No. I say there's no way they miss the Super Bowl.
I'm not picking against the Patriots.
But then you're covering both sides.
No, I'm not. That's a rule. I never would pick against them.
So you agree that they will be in the Super Bowl?
I'm going to pick them every week for the rest of time.
For the rest of time. Time immemorial.
All right, let's move on and talk about here's two teams going nowhere. The New York Jets and Cleveland Browns. Who are the bottom two teams in the AFC standings right now. 2-5, Jets coming off a win over the Ravens. The Browns at home, still looking for that first win, and it looks like all indications point to Josh McCown returning to the lineup. And, Mark, I know you've been picking the Browns a lot this year, and I got a feeling you're going to pick them again. And I just want you to remember a nice little helicopter spin that we gave Josh McCown last season when he came into the Meadowlands. You come near that goal line again, the helicopter spinning once more.
I think you
Jets, 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 Jets.
Well, you can go on with your chanting. you know, we just did a network piece where we had to put this under the category of teams pushing for the playoffs. I would suggest a different title for this game.
Pushing up daisies?
I mean, please.
Ooh, hey.
But that helicopter spin might have been the best thing that happened to Cleveland because it is the first thing that sunk that team, got Hugh Jackson to be their coach.
Wait,
and it's the first coach.
They weren't going to get sunk either way. Like.
Maybe not. McCown actually played very well last year, and he's the X factor in this game because if you had Kevin Hogan in here who can run for you as a wildcat quarterback, couple plays a game, he cannot throw the ball at an NFL level. McCown can.
Kevin Hogan has the most hideous quarterback delivery I've ever seen in my life.
Blake Bortles is like, what about me?
No. I mean, Kevin Hogan throws like a cricket bowler. He brings it over the top like this and then heaves
the
it.
The Kevin Hogan like game, though, deserves like a, not a 30 for 30, but maybe one of those shorts. Like the Kevin Hogan game last week was an amazing thing to behold.
Yeah, and I don't know what we're asking of the sixth quarterback to play for a team in 7 weeks. I don't think we should ask Kevin Hogan to be some sort of like hidden gem. You know, he is what he is. McCown, though, is a very good quarterback, and he's got the ability. They said he's throwing the ball very well in Wednesday's practice, also on Thursday. And that opens up a whole new element in Cleveland's offense that was not present the last couple weeks. And I would say this is a dangerous matchup for the Jets because of how victimized they've been downfield. You don't have Corey Coleman, but listen, there's a chance here. This game evens out with a – if Geno Smith were starting this game, this would be Cleveland's hands down in my book.
I don't think Cleveland is anything hands down. And I think every game is dangerous for the Jets because the Jets aren't very good either. But I know there seems to be a groundswell all of a sudden that Josh McCown is like a really good quarterback. And I don't agree. I think he's going to struggle against, even though the Jets are a flawed team.
Let the record
he'll
show.
Struggle against the pass rush.
There's nothing all of a sudden about my support for Josh McCown.
Well, you've been pretty much on the Josh McCown bandwagon, but it's not like they're getting an all pro back or something.
It's not an all pro, but you're talking about going from Kevin Hogan.
Well, that's
to
an
Josh
upgrade.
McCown.
That's
that is what would have been a 30-7 Jets win to the game is suddenly it's a pick 'em. It's what it is because this game is in Cleveland, not that that's a huge home field advantage, but the Jets are vulnerable in many ways and you've got
they
a quarterback in McCown that nearly beat the Ravens, that threw for 400 and something yards against the Broncos last year, that's done this that you know week after week is showing you he can throw the ball and get it to his receivers. He is a dangerous quarterback in this matchup.
These are the two worst teams in football according to Football Outsiders.
Makes sense.
Well, that's not a surprise.
And, but that shows you why not the Browns.
I don't think the Jets are the second worst team in football.
They've had some games that were so bad that they've skewed some of these metrics, in my opinion. I think the Jets are bad, but not like bottom of the world bad.
No,
they've had bottom of the world moments, but yeah, I we'll see. I agree. I think this game is kind of a part of me, like in a dark part of my mind, I would have no problem. I don't want the Browns to go winless. I think they deserve a win at some point. And if they beat the Jets and they take me off life support in my hope situation, because I'm looking at that schedule and I'm getting excited.
Now you're thinking they could get to 5-5.
I'm thinking they could potentially, but if you just get beat by the Browns, then I'm completely not emotionally invested at all. That'd be fun.
Major.
Are you guys going to be cool this Sunday? Like Mark and
I think it's I think it's fair to say.
They play every year.
Well, it's also fair to say that at this point, I mean, how upset would you like me to get about the Browns winning or losing this game? I'm not in that place anymore, and I think that Dan's pretty close to not being in that place either.
Ryan Fitzpatrick will have a passer rating over 100 in this game. I think he'll play very well.
The offense totally came to life when he came in the game last week.
At least for one series.
Major running back advantage for the Browns in this game. Isaiah Crowell was cutting fantastically against the Bengals. Matt Forte needs 30 carries to reach 100 yards this year. He's averaging 3.5 yards per carry and looks slower than that.
Jets have the number two rush defense, held the Ravens to 9 yards on the ground.
Well, that's because the Ravens don't believe in running the ball.
Let's move on. Talking AFC West matchup. Ooh, this is a good one, Greg, and I know you're excited about it. The San Diego Superchargers, fresh off an incredible comeback win in Atlanta, now travel to Denver to face the first place Broncos, and the Broncos look very much like the Broncos made the Super Bowl run last year against the Texans, a dominant defensive effort, and the quarterback did enough to create a convincing win. But now C.J. Anderson looks like he's out for the year. How big a loss is that for the Broncos?
It's big because their offense is not a explosive offense, and I think they were building something with Anderson and Booker as a 1-2 combination. Now you're really cooking with gas there with Gary Kubiak's zone running scheme. Now it's down to Booker. I think you've got a guy who is as talented enough to be a starter with Booker. It's not a huge downgrade Anderson to Booker, but the problem is you only got one guy now, and if Booker gets hurt, that's really going to hurt them.
Late October of 2016, who's the better team in this matchup?
I think the Chargers. I'm picking the Chargers.
I mean, I really believe the Chargers might be better than the Denver Broncos as of this week.
I thought the Chargers have been a top 10 team this whole season, and that remains true. I think they've got the talent of a top 10 team, and they played that way. But so do the Broncos. Like, I can't say I'd be surprised if the Broncos at home with that defense manages to hurt Phillip Rivers, who has the number two scoring offense.
Yeah, there's no reason to take anything away from Denver's defense. But I'll say something. It's funny what happens with these teams and PR-wise and how they're perceived, that a month ago, everyone was all over San Diego for Joey Bosa and everything else. Now it looks like with Hunter Henry and Joey Bosa, the Chargers have come out of this with one of the best drafts
league-wide. Jadavis Brown, too.
Yeah, I mean, they've found players, and they are frisky, and the Chargers feel like that team that is coming up on your schedule, home or away, I don't want to deal with them at all.
They should be 5-2, just like the Broncos are 5-2.
Right.
They blew two games that were kind of fluky. They happen once every 10 years. They just happen to do them in over 3 weeks. But, yeah, I mean, that makes sense why you would view them as close. I mean, but they're in Denver. This is a tough matchup against the reigning Super Bowl champion that's playing at a very high level.
I'm staying
with Denver.
I'm picking the Chargers, and it's such a big game for them so early in the season, because if you can pull off sweeping the Broncos, who hadn't lost a road AFC West game, had barely lost any division games in years, if you can pull off sweeping them, and in between you come back from 17 in Atlanta, I mean, they are going to feel like they can beat everyone. I am excited.
Why don't you just become a Chargers fan?
I am. This year I'm
migrate over across the country.
What is up with the schedule makers doing this game twice in 3 weeks? I don't know.
Mark, you'll enjoy. Dan had an inspired comparison for Joey Bosa.
Please.
Oh, yeah. You'll remember this guy because he shipwrecked a Jets playoff game against your Browns. But a young Mark Gastineau watching those highlights, the way he combines the speed and the power and just his build and even number.
It's like watching
similar him. Looking guy.
That's a good comparison. And just the fact that, you know, you didn't have the offseason the same way other players did. You missed live action for so long. And it doesn't matter who he's paired up against. He seems to just bowl right through people. He's one of the more fun players to watch on defense.
Right.
And I heard, Wes, you say it, defensive player of the year, defensive rookie of the year. Absolutely, if he continues on this course.
They're a fun team to watch. And Rivers right now, taking away three of his favorite targets, playing this well. It's another one. He's had these great first halves the last few years. He needs to keep it going this year, but he's playing as well as any quarterback.
Where do the Kissing Cousins fall on this game?
It's a coin flip game. I don't want to disrespect the Broncos, so I'll pick them in a home game.
If this were in San Diego, I'd just go in home team. Denver's defense, they've not gotten worse. I think that they're going to do the job. It can be a close game, though.
Let's move on, gentlemen. Here's another matchup between two NFC teams. The Green Bay Packers, 4-2, travel to Atlanta to face the Falcons.
Great week of games.
Yeah, this is a very good listen.
By far the best week of games.
NFL rightly got slaughtered. Maybe the Sunday night game got more heat than it deserved, but in general, it was not a good week of games in Week 7. If we get another bad week of games with some good matchups, then I'm a little nervous.
Well,
about the season.
Then I start asking, and this is an annoying argument for the people: are there too many teams in the NFL? Maybe we need to go back to 26 teams like this.
Whoa.
Get rid of some of this junk. Get the talent level up on every team, and have more matchups, more weeks full of competitive showdowns, not a bunch of games where you know that one of the teams will not compete.
Should we
contract
the Cleveland Browns again?
No.
Maybe if you
never
stop.
Happen.
Maybe
it will never happen.
Maybe if you stop suspending some of the best players in the league, you'll have better football.
All right, let's talk about this game. The Falcons are 4-3 now and on a two-game losing streak. And you know what? You wonder, and we all agree this team is not a fluke team, at least on offense. They can score against anybody just about. But you wonder if their confidence here, Chris Wessling, is shaken a little bit after blowing that game at home to the Chargers. Now you got Green Bay, which is a flawed team, but still a team that could go into a building and beat a team like the Falcons. How do you see this game looking?
The Falcons don't strike me as a team that's going to have their confidence shaken after going into Denver, going into Seattle, and pounding the Panthers. I don't think that's in their DNA this year. I do think that the loss of Tevin Coleman cannot be overstated. He reminds me of the Saints era Darren Sproles, where they're just using him as a mismatch against linebackers. And if you take that element away, I mean, it's a game of mismatches anyway, but that's one element. I wonder, even without Tevin Coleman, do the Packers have the firepower to keep up with the Falcons?
Right.
I don't think so at all.
I think the Falcons, it's weird, the last 2 weeks have almost convinced me more that they're going to be around. I think Ryan is just making terrific throws. His performance in Seattle was about as good as any quarterback's played all year. And the pass rush is coming around. You mentioned it, I remember, on Sunday night show. Beasley, Keanu Neal is starting to give, like, the Deion Jones is playing better. I don't feel any worse about this team at 4-3. I don't feel good about the Packers, and that's why, guys.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to do
this. Are you locking it up?
I like it.
Lock it up?
Let's lock it up.
He's locking it up. Come on, lock it. It's locked.
It's in the vault.
It's in the vault.
Take it home, Mighty Ice.
Smart lock.
I like that. You're locking up the Falcons, and that makes sense. I think I'm with you on that. I think that's a their defense, by the way, now after getting shredded by Phil Rivers – pass defense ranked 31st in the league. But we, you know,
not
we hear that stat, and then you say, oh, here comes Aaron Rodgers. But as we've talked about, and a lot of people have talked about, we don't know what to expect from the Packers, even though they had some nice moments in the second half the last time we saw.
Yeah, Next Gen Stats points out, too, that what the Chargers did against Atlanta's defense is they were very productive targeting them over the middle of the field over and over. And if you're Green Bay, the only player that's been productive over the middle of the field is Randall Cobb. You've got a wide receiver playing running back right now for you half the time. I just don't think Green Bay's offense can keep up with, as Wes said, a Falcons team that looks completely confident in what they are doing. This is the polar opposite of the team that went 6-0 last year with smoke and mirrors. Totally different deal, this situation. The Packers also are getting crushed by number one wide receivers this year, and Julio Jones, he's going to cook up a big game.
Hey, how about this for Julio Jones? The Packers, according to our research guide, Packers have allowed 101 receiving yards per game to opponents' number one wide receivers this season. That's 31st in the league. Julio comes in leading the league with 830 yards of receiving. So I would take Julio Jones off your bench this week and start him in fantasy. That's my fantasy.
It's smart that he was on your bench, though. Yeah. Very, very smart that he's been on riding your
bench. Keep him healthy. Yeah. Get him in now, I would say.
I'll be interested to see if a healthy Devontae.
Greg, just disgusted by that.
No, I'm with you. I'm holding my tongue about saying anything.
Why? What's wrong?
Why? What's the – this is
well,
a podcast.
No.
Now's
I mean,
the time to speak.
Yeah, speak up.
You were hitting on what was one of my pet peeves back when I was in the fantasy
okay,
industry.
Okay, let's hear it.
That's what I'm saying. Whenever people are like, well, I gotta tell you this week, no matter what you're thinking – you got to play Matthew Stafford. It's like, thanks, buddy. He's scoring 30 points.
Well, you should have piggybacked that because that's kind of what I was
referencing. I was with you. I was just dating.
You hung me out to dry and just gave me
I think he eventually piggybacked.
Kind of a sour look.
If you're playing in an 8 or 10 team league, I mean, grow up.
Grow up. Well, some would say, like, don't play a game at all. That's a better way.
Yeah, that's also like if you're co-managing a fantasy team, grow up.
How about this? Be an adult.
It's like, oh, I have to decide who to start this week, DeMarco Murray or Ezekiel Elliott. All right, that's fun. Grow up.
Last thoughts about this game, guys.
Yeah, I think I want to be interested to see, is Davante Adams going to displace Jordy Nelson? Because Davante Adams is outplaying him.
Mm. He does seem like a different and better player this year.
Well, you know why?
The low bar, but a much better
player. Well, he doesn't have a high ankle sprain, Greg. The fantasy community loved to bash Davante Adams all last year while he was playing through a high ankle sprain, which is impossible
to do
well.
For all of last season.
That's ligament damage, folks.
That's what a high ankle sprain does. It lingers for months.
Did you like that wink at you there?
Yes, that was well done. Thank
I love this. Here we go. If we don't get a good Sunday night matchup this week, we'll never get it because Al, Chris, and Michelle we'll call a matchup between the Philadelphia Eagles, 4-2, coming off a win where they, all right, they didn't play great on both sides of the ball necessarily, but they did knock off the undefeated Minnesota Vikings, and now they travel to Big D to face the 5-1 Cowboys. Everybody is pumped up about the Cowboys right now, and rightfully so. So here we go, Mark Sessler, Carson Wentz versus Dak Prescott. I'm gonna hit him with a hind right now, Mark. What is the quarterback you would choose if you were starting a franchise tomorrow? Which one?
Carson Wentz. But I'll tell you what, this Cowboys team, I was wrong about something. There is one team that can challenge New England if things stay on this course.
There's another one.
It is the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys are going to teach the Philadelphia Eagles a lesson.
A lesson in what?
They are going to take the Eagles down this week. You are not
going to teach them a lesson in what?
Football.
Humility?
Football.
Okay.
Just the sport.
Cool.
The sport in general.
Ground and pound football?
Yeah. I think this Cowboys team is a nightmare matchup for most teams around the league. And we saw the Eagles. They did what they did against the Vikings. And it came for one reason, because the Vikings – one problem with the Vikings, which is very evident along with their line issues, is they are a one-dimensional team on offense. They've got no run game. The Cowboys are the direct opposite. They are going to, week after week, beat people up. Ezekiel Elliott has become one of the best running backs in the league. And you've got two quarterbacks now, once Tony Romo gets healthy, that can guide you. This is a team that is built to last this entire season, and the Eagles are not their equivalent. The Eagles have a good defense, but they're not going to be able to take down this Dallas offense.
Guess who's back for the Cowboys this week? Dez Bryant, only one of the best wide receivers in the league.
I'm not sure they even need him the way that they would have in past seasons.
You know what, though? Jim Schwartz wants to come in there and shut down Ezekiel Elliott. That's fine. We've got Dez. We've got Cole Beasley.
Yeah.
And they got Jason Witten.
You know, Rex and company, I think, you know, they blew the LeSean McCoy situation and blew his MVP candidacy potentially as well. The Cowboys played it right with Dez. They didn't rush him back. I think, you know, we'll see how he comes back healthy. But they gave him 4 weeks to get right, and hopefully it works this time.
I love Mark's read on this game. I love it so much.
Uh-oh. Is he going to lock it up?
Then I'm going to lock it up!
He's locking it up, baby! Hit him! Lock it up! Yes. Spin the wheel. That vault's sealed.
Lock it up. Cowboys win. They're the better team, and Mark's right. I agree with you. Out of all the NFC contenders, the Seahawks and Cowboys strike me as the ones built to last this year.
I can't disagree. I can't disagree either, as much as I would love to as a lifelong contrarian, as it said in my little board last week.
Yeah.
But the Eagles, how many passing yards do they have the last 2 weeks? I think they've combined for fewer than 300 passing yards in their last two games. Could that be correct? It's something like that. It's insane. You can't keep winning that way. The offense, I think they're doing a really good job not exposing Carson Wentz to major problems, and they're doing a good job ultimately with a below-average talent for an offense with a rookie quarterback. But it's tough to do that week after week, especially against a team like Dallas, who I think has its stuff together, at least on one side of the ball. They're dominant.
Who are you going to – what, Greg, we get, you know, two tickets to the Super Bowl. Cowboys, Pats, who are you taking?
Well, they're up for grabs this year. Usually I've got it all mapped out. You know, I've had different friends, parents.
You just acknowledged the Patriots are
definitely. Shall I provide our listenership with your email address?
Oh, you just
address?
Trapped him.
It's up for grabs right now. Haven't made a decision.
No?
Patriots,
well, you
Cowboys.
Gotta. Here's the tricky thing is you can't wait. And I actually think this time I was thinking I am going to wait to find out who's in the game. Usually, though, people want to make plans. You got to, you know, get
expensive flight.
A flight.
Well, that means that they will stay with you in your hotel room.
It's fine with me.
Well,
wife's not coming this year. Come stay with
me. I don't know what that means.
You're going to invite a woman? What are you getting at there?
I'm saying I got extra room for some buddies if you want to come. If my dad feels like crashing in the room, I don't think he's going to want to.
Old man Rosie.
Why not?
Why would a guy want to go to the Super Bowl? Totally get you.
I also believe Dallas.
Who are you bringing?
Who am I going to bring? I always have it locked up. I figure it out. This year, Keith. Keith goes every other year, my old man. And then my brother-in-law, Keith. Double Keith action.
I did feel bad when my father-in-law was at the Patriots, you know, winning that fourth Super Bowl and, you know.
Yeah, but you can't control
old Tommy Rosenthal's at home wondering what could
Tommy, happen. Tommy, you're going to the Super Bowl, right? Your boy works for the NFL. No, Sully. He's actually taking his father-in-law. Crushing.
Terrible narrative.
I don't know who to take this year. I got quite the conundrum going on.
Greg, I'm sorry that that happened to you.
Yeah, I like that my dad's such a local tough.
All right, let's move on to Monday Night Football. Yeah, we're all picking the Cowboys Sunday night, but hopefully we'll get a good game out of it. But it could get away from Philly. I think we're all in agreement there. Finally, Monday Night Football, and who knows, guys, if it was a case, a little bit of the yips. We named the Vikings the team of around the NFL. And they lay an egg in Philly for their first loss of the season. And here's another thing I was a little uncomfortable about with the Vikings. Mike Zimmer, who – and I linked out here, Mark, to your excellent piece you wrote on Mike Zimmer. He is, under the wording, has pushed a lot of the right buttons. Links out right to a Sessler banger.
Okay.
I did that. You were ill. I said, this will lift Mark's spirits because I know you reach the end around every day.
I felt that.
He's pushed a lot of right buttons. But going into the bye week, he left stuffed animal cats all over the Winter Park complex of the Vikings. As a reminder to the players as they hit their bye week, not to become, wait for it, fat cats. And then some of the cats had their throats slit, their cotton innards pulled out, dipped in red paint, because fat cats get slaughtered. And then they go and they lay their biggest egg of the season. I'm just, some of the juju now around the Vikes, I'm a little nervous.
That is an odd move. I can't really talk around that in any other way. That's a strange one. I'm not sure that he got that from calling up Bill Parcells.
I don't know. Bill Parcells loves these cheesy little things. He used to hang items of cheese from the ceiling. It sounds exactly from
I'm just
Bill
saying
Parcells.
I'm not.
He says, don't take the cheese. These are grown men that
Wait,
he's
don't
doing
take
this
the cheese
for.
Is kind of cool, though. I like that. I like don't take the cheese.
I'm just not going to tag Bill Parcells with it.
The Vikings.
How about when he put an airplane ticket for Pat Swilling on Lawrence Taylor's chair? Told him he can get a better pass rusher.
Wow.
Vikings 5-1. They travel again with the Chicago Bears in primetime. This feels like we're being trolled. The 1-6 Bears. And we're going to see Jay Cutler here, it looks like, who missed 5 weeks with a sprained thumb. That's what it was. I was asking you, we were trying to figure out what we wanted to talk about on Thursday's show. Greg, what did Jay Cutler say when the press asked him if he believed that the coach, John Fox, had faith in him or believed in him going into this game, turning back to him in QB?
Well, he said he doesn't have a choice.
I'm going to miss Jay Cutler.
A great answer. He just says he doesn't have a choice at this point.
The most nonchalant signal caller in our lifetime.
Again, we kill guys.
But that's honest.
They give
canned
answers. No. And there's the honest answer. I know John Fox doesn't believe in me. He was totally prepared to stick with the ultimate C-plus quarterback, Brian Hoyer. And now he has to go back to me, and he doesn't have a choice.
There's a report from the Chicago Tribune on Thursday that John Fox had told his friends he was, quote, done with Jay Cutler. And now he's got to go back to him.
There are parallels in New York with the Jets and Ryan Fitzpatrick. It just creates an awkward situation. So the Vikings, this seems they're on the road, but no one gets scared playing at Soldier Field. It seems like a perfect situation, Mark, for the Vikings to get healthy, get back in the win column, and continue cruising.
It does. I mean, I got to be honest. I was concerned watching that Eagles game. You know, I just talked about the Eagles side of it before, but – the Vikings have legitimate issues on their offensive line, as you guys mentioned on Sunday night, and so that exposes them to any active pass rush, and the Bears don't have the worst defense in the league. They are able to get to the quarterback.
Pernell McPhee came back last week, too.
There you go. So that's trouble, and I think that's it is a one-dimensional offense where you cannot count on the ground game to get you out of a jam, and up through their early win streak, it was Sam Bradford connecting with fill in the blank downfield and doing it beautifully. That crumbled against the Eagles. And so I don't see that duplicating itself against the Bears. But we talked about the team of ATL. They go 5-0. They weren't going to go 7-0 after that. They were going to have their struggles, and they are not the best team in the NFC. I don't think that they are. I don't think that's the claim. But they're going to have some ups and downs based on some very evident weaknesses. I don't think that I think they'll get healthy against Chicago here.
Here's one right here, because, Wes, you pointed it out with the Texans, and we rightfully chuckled at the thought. But the Texans have less touchdowns this year than Melvin Gordon. Well, guess who has the same amount of offensive touchdowns as Melvin Gordon? The Vikings. They only have 10 all season. So this offense is a very real concern. Are they going to be able to score enough points to win enough games?
That is a concern, and you would think, Mark mentioned they can't count on the running game. They've been using Cordarrelle Patterson as a wild card around the line of scrimmage. He's in concussion protocol.
I don't think he's going to play.
It shouldn't be a big deal against the Bears, but this tackle situation is not going away. It's been there the whole season. I mean, their defense played fine against Philadelphia. The defense gave up 10 points.
Better than fine.
Right. It forced 3 turnovers. They're going to be fine. The defense is going to win them games enough this week, each week. But Schwartz really blitzed them like crazy, and they had no answers for that. And you would expect the Bears and just about every team to do that. It was insane how much Bradford was under pressure in that
It game. Bothers me when, as you read last week, Wes, that the general manager says, I'm not trading any more draft picks. I'm not going to trade for Joe Thomas, which, by the way, if you got Joe Thomas into this situation, and let's say you give up a second-round pick, will a second-round pick for this Vikings team ever be Joe Thomas? No, it will not. I would gamble to say you're never going to find Joe Thomas in the second round. This is a team with its window open right now. Why now have you stopped being aggressive and going after the players to get you out of this? A second round pick 2 years from now is what you could give up.
There is a very good reason, and it's a boring reason, but they don't have salary cap space.
Well, that's a bigger issue, and that part stops them from doing it. But then don't sell it as I'm not trading draft picks, because this is a team that saved its season by not just going with Sean Hill out of the gate, and so you can't go halfway. You have an obvious weakness.
I think the Vikings will be okay. I think their schedule is pretty favorable when you look at it.
Yeah.
But there are some things trending against them. There is the issue with the pass, protecting the quarterback. They're averaging 2.6 yards per carry right now, which is outrageous.
For the season?
Yeah, last in the league. And average yards after contact, less than 1 yard this season. And when you no running game, and the defense is going to start getting after Sam Bradford, and there's going to be some offensive line issues, you're putting too much on Sam Bradford's plate, and you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah, because what's happening watching them is they are running in very obvious run situations, and they are forced to pass in very obvious passing situations because there's no diversity. You can't sneak up on any team with your run game. And so maybe they're easier to plan against than we would like at this point.
Well, they're down 21-3 against the Eagles, and they can't even try to throw the ball down the field because you can't protect them. They're just dinking and dunking when they're way behind. They're not an offensive team. We know that. They're going to win games, defense, and special
teams. They do have a good coaching staff, though, and maybe they'll concoct something for this game.
This is a good matchup for them to get healthy. We'll see if they can figure out the rest of their problems. All right, that's it. That is the preview of Week 8. The next time you hear from us, we will be recapping all the games that we just previewed. That's how this works. So thank you to everyone for listening. We appreciate you, both sides of the Atlantic.
That's how this works for another 12, 13 weeks until New England wins the Super Bowl.
That's where we are. Just pretend that's not going to happen.
Both sides of the Pacific.
Right. Mm. Both sides of the Pacific as well. Just
Asia listeners. Just a shout out to all the Asia listeners.
The Asians?
We don't shout out to them enough.
That's what I'm saying.
Everyone in the world. And if we had the rights, we would play a Michael Jackson world healing late period song right now. Heal the World maybe jumps to mind immediately.
And the three intergalactic listeners.
Those people in space.
Eurasia, Oceania, all these regions.
So many places. Okay. Well, we got to get out of here. This is Dan Hansis signing off for The Quiet Storm. Welcome back, buddy. The mailman, the boss, and La Seed behind the glass. Till Sunday!
I'm on NFL Network. Oh.